First to some latest news about our oceans. If you've been struggling to keep cool in recent weeks as we swelter through record temperatures, spare a thought for the poor species that live in the ocean. They've been experiencing their own form of overheating in the form of marine heat waves, which have been multiplying at an alarming rate. Up till now, relatively little's been known about marine heat waves as opposed to warming, as climate scientists have focused on terrestrial heat waves. But a groundbreaking new international study by the University of Western Australia looks set to change that. The findings from this international study, published on Tuesday in the journal Nature Communications, show that marine heat waves have increased by over 50% over the past century. And the bad news is they're becoming hotter, longer and ever more frequent, wreaking devastating effects on marine life and coastal communities around the world. Dr. Thomas Vanberg, who co-authored the UWA study, is an associate professor of marine ecology at the university's Oceans Institute. He joins me now from Perth. Welcome to Saturday Extra.
Hello, Geraldine.
Dare I ask first, is there any good news here in this study?
I don't know. I think the good news is that we know what's going on now, and that gives us some idea and what we need to prepare for.
Okay. So the concept of this marine heat wave is relatively new to science, I gather. The term was only really invented in 2011. So what are marine heat waves, and how did you become so absorbed in them?
So marine heat waves are defined as prolonged periods of unusually warm waters in the oceans. The definition is really inspired by the definition of terrestrial heat waves, because the atmospheric scientists have, as you pointed out, studied heat waves for a very long time. And a couple of years ago, in 2011, actually, as you mentioned, there was a period of very, very warm water along the West Australian coastline that caused all sorts of ecological impacts. And that really instigated the interest in how these periodically extreme water temperatures occur and what their implications are for marine ecosystems and for the services that people derive from these marine ecosystems.
Your own study spells it out. It's at least five consecutive days with sea surface temperatures in the top 10% of warmth over a 30-year period.
Yes, that's a technical definition, and that just gives us an idea, a framework to quantitatively define when there's a heat wave and when it's something else. I mean, shorter duration heat spikes can also be very important, but we just don't call them heat waves, we call them heat spikes.
Okay, how would they differ from a terrestrial heat wave?
Terrestrial heat waves and marine heat waves are quite similar phenomena in many ways, but because of the properties of ocean water, marine heat waves evolve slower than terrestrial heat waves. So in the terrestrial marine heat wave definition, for instance, it's only a three-day period that's required to exceed the climatology before you enter a heat wave. Marine heat waves generally have longer durations, and their absolute intensities are not quite as extreme as terrestrial heat waves. But that doesn't mean that they don't have serious impacts on marine flora and fauna.
Have we been too focused, would you say, on what's happening on land?
I don't think you can say we've been too focused, because what's happening on land is equally severe. But we probably ignored what was happening in the oceans because it's sort of out of sight and out of mind. A lot of this happens where you can't really see the implications immediately. And we don't have as long data sets to compare change against in the ocean. So sometimes we don't actually know what it was supposed to be. And therefore, we don't know when it's not normal.
How interesting. And you suggest in your work that, to help us understand, that the oceans are a little bit like the tropics in that temperatures typically move in a narrow band. And that's what makes this surprising, is it? That it's moving out of that typical band?
Yeah, so this is what I was talking about before, where I said the extremes are not so extreme in the water as they are on land. If you think about daily temperature variation, for instance, in many locations on land can vary from, you know, almost zero to 20, 30 degrees or whatever. In the oceans, because of the thermal properties of water, that daily variation is much smaller. So the absolute variation is less in seawater. So this means when you have a heat wave, a serious heat wave in the marine environment, we're talking between 2 and 4 or 5 degrees. We're not talking, you know, plus 10 degrees or whatever as you have on land or even more.
Are they a natural occurrence, these marine heat waves?
Yes and no. So temperature is always going to vary because of, you know, cloud cover. Some days are just hotter than others because the winds are blowing more or less. And same thing goes on in the water. So there's always variation in temperature. But when you have all of this natural variation in temperature that sort of goes into phase and you have a lot of them aligning at the same days, then you can get these extreme temperature events. Now, when you have that happening and superimpose that onto a climbing trend in the mean temperature, which is caused by global climate change, then you get an increasing frequency and increasing duration and intensity of these marine heat waves. Marine heat waves are natural, just like heat waves on land, but the increase in the severity and the frequency and the duration has been linked to anthropogenic climate change, so basically human-driven climate change.
You're sure of this, are you? You do believe that there's no doubt that there are linkages there?
Personally, I'm 100% sure, but you can never be 100% sure, of course. But the science is quite clear. The modeling studies that have been done are very thorough, that have linked these events to human climate change. And for instance, there was a marine heat wave in the Tasman Sea in 2015-16, and the very rigorous modeling exercise that was undertaken there showed that the intensity of that event was something like 7 times higher, or the likelihood of that happening was 7 times higher because of climate change.
And is this related to the El Niño and La Niña effects?
Yes. So the El Niño and La Niña cycle is part of that natural background variation that causes these events in the first place. They are also affected by changes in the global climate, of course. And when you have these changes in the frequency of those broad-scale global events that affect ocean temperatures, they affect, you know, regional occurrences of marine heat waves as well.
Now, this is the first time, amazingly to me, that trends in extreme ocean temperatures have been examined on a global scale. What did your study find?
So as you pointed out, our study found that there has been an increase in the number of days we define as marine heat wave relative to an underlying 30-year climatological period. And that increase has been since about the 1900s until now. And it's been about a 50% increase in the global average occurrence of marine heat waves. This means, if you put it into perspective, that a location which in around 1900 experienced 30 days of marine heat wave now experience about 45 days of marine heat wave. And you can imagine that that is quite a substantial increase in the extreme heat that the organisms living in that location have to deal with now.
Could you tell me where the biggest marine heat wave has ever been recorded?
We are only in the process of actually quantifying the different marine heat waves now, so that this is work that's ongoing. But the marine heat wave we had in Western Australia, for instance, in 2011, definitely ranks right in the top somewhere. And we saw substantial ecological impacts and flow-on effects from that heat wave.
Like what?
So we had major collapse of kelp forests along several hundred kilometers of coastline. We had collapse of seagrass meadows in Shark Bay World Heritage Area. We had severe coral bleaching at Ningaloo Reef and other places. These impacts were quite substantial.
I don't remember hearing nearly as much about that as hearing about the coral bleaching off the Great Barrier Reef last year. Why are the kelp forests and seagrass meadows so important?
Well, seagrass meadows and kelp forests are important because, just like corals actually, they create biogenic habitat that supports a lot of associated species. So kelp forests, for instance, or kelps that make up the kelp forest, are basically the trees of the oceans. They grow very, very fast and produce a lot of biomass that serves as food and physical shelter for many associated species. And in Australia, for instance, some of our most lucrative commercial fisheries, for instance, the fishery for Western Rock Lobster and for abalone, depend on kelp forests.
So let me ask you this. Could they bounce back? Is there any chance that even though they've been so affected, they could regrow?
It's not entirely out of the question, of course, but the thing to remember here is that ocean warming, which is part of the underlying driver here, really is something that in most regions of the world are going in one direction. And potentially these kelp forests and other habitats could recover at least temporarily. But unless we do something about the core issue, and that is essentially emission of greenhouse gases, then they won't recover. Our marine ecosystems will change in response to the heat in the atmosphere at the moment and the oceans.
I gather there was something called the blob, which was stretched from Mexico to Alaska, and that was between 2014 and 2015, and the ocean became 3 degrees warmer than usual, and there was a lot of wide death and destruction to marine life, mass deaths of seabirds. In other words, it could be seen much more vivid, I suppose, than what you just described underwater in WA. Is that the awful truth, that until we see it, we won't sort of fully believe it?
I think there's some truth to that. I mean, we did see impacts in Western Australia as well. We did have fish kills. We did have, you know, penguins starving to death and that sort of thing. We had whale sharks migrating down the coast all the way down to Albany, etc. But I think there is a lot of truth to, you know, people need to see it to believe it. And it's not as visible when it's hidden under the oceans.
Thank you very much indeed for explaining this to us.
You're most welcome.
As Thomas Wernberg, he's the Associate Professor of Marine Ecology at UWA's Oceans Institute and the co-author of a new study on marine heatwaves. And if you'd like to follow up, he's written several articles on marine heatwaves in The Conversation, and his new research can be accessed online at www.nature.com.